This is episode number 934 with National Poetry Slam champion and award-winning poet in Q.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Eleanor Roosevelt said, "Speak your mind even though your voice shakes." Have you ever just had something on your mind and on your heart that you need to get out into the world, that you want people to hear, that you know you need to say, but you might be afraid to say it? Well, there's a reason why you have that inside of you. It's because it's part of your story. It's a part of your journey. It's a part of your gift, your talent, your dream. And hopefully in this episode, it'll give you the inspiration, the courage to truly go after what you want, to truly say the things you need to say in your relationships, in your career, in your life, to bring your dreams into the world, into its fullest existence. And we've got my good friend, NQ, who's a National Poetry Slam champion, award-winning poet, and multi-platinum songwriter. His groundbreaking achievements include being named to Oprah's Super Soul 100 list of the world's most influential thought leaders, being the first spoken word artist to perform with Cirque du Soleil, and being featured on A&E, ESPN, and HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam. He's inspired audiences around the world through his live performances and storytelling workshops, which are incredible. He's performed at, I think, almost every Summit of Greatness we've had, and he's got 4 standing ovations the last Summit of Greatness last year at the end of a 2-day intense weekend. And he is just a man on a mission. Many of his recent poetry videos have gone viral with over 70 million views combined. And as a songwriter, he's got hit singles with Selena Gomez that went multi-platinum. He's written with renowned artists, including Aloe Black, Miley Cyrus, Mike Posner, Foster the People. And his songs have accumulated over 1 billion views on YouTube alone. And he's got a new book out called Inquire Within. It's coming out right now, and I highly recommend you get this. Because in this new book, we talk about the difference between codependent love and unconditional love in this interview, and the poetry that he writes about this as well. We also dive into his take on the major problems in the world today and how we can come together to solve them. The power of using your voice and how you can inspire others to use theirs as well, because leaders create other leaders. And he opens up about his relationship with his father and how his absence inspired his poetry today. That and so much more. I am so excited for you to listen to this. Please share. Please send it to a friend. Text them this link over on Apple or Spotify, or just text the link lewishowes.com/934 to get this spread to as many people as possible to inspire them during this time. And I'm so excited about this. So let's dive into this episode with the one and only NQ.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12-pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade, New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker, London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
And so when I teach people, like, what is it specifically you want? Like, your personal life, your health, the relationships, right. What are the energy, the feelings that you want? What's the numbers you have in your bank account? Like, let's get specific, because then you can break it down and figure out how to make it happen.
And then you take your own medicine. So that was your...
Exactly. So I was like, what do I really want?
Right.
This was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know if it was before you, but it was, I was like, you know, people say they want to change the world, then they want to reach billions of people. And I'm like, okay, what's a big dream that is unrealistic, but is realistic in some ways?
Right.
100 million people in a week. Mm-hmm. I was just like, that is a big, scary number. Mm-hmm. Like, who am I, this little kid from Ohio, to say he wants to impact 100 million people a week?
But who is anyone to do anything?
Exactly. And I was just like, that feels good to me, 100 million people. Because I think we had maybe a million downloads a month at the time, you know, whatever, this years ago. And I was like, okay, if we can go to a million a month to like 100 a month and then 100 a week, then you're making a dent on the world in a big way. Right. You're really changing culture, humanity, if you're impacting and reaching that many people a week and having conversations around.
Do you feel that when it happens? Like, do you feel where you're at now? Do you feel the impact now?
People will message me. Someone messaged me actually this morning on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And said, Lewis, I've been following you for 12 years since I've been on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They've been following me. And they're like, because I announced that I have this movie coming out tomorrow night. And they said, it's been amazing to watch your trajectory of how far you've come and the impact you're having on people. People are texting me that all the time right now because of this movie is coming out. And I think when you're in it, you don't see it as much until you take a moment to reflect and inquire within about how far you've come.
Yeah.
And so it's hard when you're in it. Because it's like 12 years has passed since I stopped playing football.
Right.
Now I'm here, but it's like I worked my butt off for 12 years.
Yeah.
And so.
Do you find that time to stop and like consider what you've accomplished? And
every night I reflect and I'm grateful for everything I have in my life and for that day. And I think I also, if I go back to like 23-year-old Lewis, mm-hmm. who was like broke on my sister's couch or whatever. And if I was like, one day I'm going to impact 5 million people a month.
Right.
I'd have been like, that's crazy to think.
You wouldn't have believed it.
I'd have been like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder how. How is it going to happen? And it's almost like you have to reverse engineer the dream in your mind and just say, okay, well, this needs to happen. And you got to write a New York Times bestseller because that's got to get attention.
Right.
And then you got to do a movie. And then you got to get on some big press like Ellen.
Yeah, totally.
And then it's like, okay, who do I need to become in order to make those things happen?
Right.
What skills do I need to learn?
Right.
Who do I need to meet? How do I need to take care of my health? Like, all those things need to happen in order for those dreams to be manifested. So then it's just figuring out, okay, who do I get to become?
Do you ever feel like, I mean, we can get started too, but
she's rolling.
I mean, do you ever feel like, well, let me say this before I ask the question. Someone said this to me the other day and unfortunately it resonated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They said, this could be the best time of your life if you weren't always waiting for it to be over. And I thought that was a very, very deep concept.
If you weren't waiting for what to be over?
Whatever the moment is. Mm. If you're in the moment, you're thinking about like why I'm in the moment, what it is that I need to do or accomplish to move forward, do you miss your life? And do you look back on these periods and think, wow, that was the best time of my life, but I was trying to get somewhere.
Mm. As like, opposed to being in the moment.
Being here.
And appreciating and just...
Completely.
Not thinking about the future.
Completely. And I'll say why I feel that way is because sometimes I'll set things up and then I forget that I made the decision to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I show up and I feel obligated. Like I have to get through this
like
in
pressure.
Order to accomplish something or, you know, whatever. And I'm not fully being present to where I am. And so that's the dichotomy. It's like having goals in the material world, and then simultaneously not looking outside of myself for validation, or not thinking that there's something out there in the future that will make me feel whole, and being present to what's actually happening where I am. Mm-hmm. So that was the question I was going to ask you. I mean, do you ever feel like that? Because if you accomplish everything you want to accomplish in 20 years, will you look back and think, I was truly there?
Mm-hmm. I think one of my superpowers since I was young was the ability to have fun in every moment. Mm. And there's a, I say that, but also every time I achieved in a goal until I was like 30, I would achieve it and I was happy for a moment, and then I was like angry.
Mm. What was,
because I think I was driven towards the achievement of feeling like, okay, I made it, but then I never felt like I made it.
Right.
So I was like, well, I got to go for something bigger. I got to make more. I got to accomplish something else. And it wasn't until I was about 30 when I started to shift that. Mm. But I was always having fun in the moment too. Like, I'm a guy who can, you've seen me at like Summit Series, just like dancing in the middle of the night.
Totally.
Just like, like I can not, I don't drink alcohol.
Right.
And I can just be fun. Mm-hmm. And just make something fun in any moment.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, whenever we're together, it's just like, we'll just laugh or whatever. So I can do that. And I think I've had that gift from childhood. I don't know why. It's just to always like have, be a child. Mm. Childlike energy in moments. So I really appreciate, I guess, that ability to have fun. But I used to be so driven to get acceptance for my accomplishments that I was never happy with the accomplishments. Mm. Because I don't think I was ever happy with who I was.
Right.
And I was never really proud of myself.
Has that shifted now? Like, do you feel like you can take ownership over?
It shifted a lot, because I think I've always been really, I mean, I feel like I've always done a good job in my life of being a good person. Mm. But I think sometimes I let myself down. And over the last year, I really woke up to the fact of like, okay, I want to do everything. I want to be proud of myself when people aren't watching. Mm. When no one's watching, when no one's on social media to see me do something, when no one's around me. Like, if I was watching myself, if the best version of myself was always watching me, would I be proud of who I am? Mm. And so I've dedicated this last year, and really since meeting my girlfriend, Jeanette, she's elevated me to think that way. Mm. She doesn't like pressure me to think that way. I think I'm just like called forth to think that way because I want to really make her proud. Mm. And I want to make myself proud.
That's beautiful.
So I remember she told me one time early on when we started dating, she was like, I want you to make me a promise.
Pause.
And she goes, because I was going through some stuff in a previous relationship and a lot of stuff was out there publicly, people spreading rumors and gossip or whatever. And so just a lot of questions floating around about what happened or whatnot. And I was like telling her everything. I was like, I'm not going to hide anything. Here's the stuff I'm proud of. Here's the stuff I'm not proud of.
Right.
Here's everything. Take it
That's
or leave
love.
It. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she was like totally accepting me. And she was like, I understand. Like, I get it. You're an amazing man. You have a great heart. And I was like, oh, you know, cry. I'm not a bad guy, you know. And then she goes, I want you to make a promise to me. Pause. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I want you to always tell me the truth about everything.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting to myself, and I go, you sure? Because I've never been in a relationship where I've said the truth and someone didn't freak out or get angry or react or get so emotional where they couldn't handle the truth.
Right.
I'm not saying you need to be happy about the truth, but to be able to handle it. And I said, you sure? Because there's thoughts I might have, there's things I might say, things I might do that you may not like. And just being honest. She goes, I always want you to tell me I can handle it. I go, you sure? She said, yes. And in that moment, I just said to myself, I'm always going to tell her the truth. I like sat there for like 20 seconds and I was like, okay, I'm a 35-year-old man. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever fully told 100% of the truth to one person.
That's deep.
There might be like a couple little white lies, like just forgetting to say something, just to not cause stress. But I was like, I'm going to tell you the truth. And I've done that with her for the last year. And it's been amazing because I don't feel like I have anything to worry, to hide.
Right.
And it's like, if you don't...
Well, it takes energy to hide.
It takes energy to hide. And also, if she doesn't accept the truth about me...
Right.
When I'm living at the highest level that I can live,
right,
then maybe we're not the right fit.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And right. I can be okay with that because I did everything in my power to be 100% in integrity.
And you want that from her too.
Absolutely.
You want that truth from
Absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely. And it's been crazy because she is probably the relationship that I'm in. She should probably be, for me, I should be the most insecure that I've ever been with someone. Mm-hmm. And the most jealous. Because she gets
a lot of attention.
She gets messaged by like the biggest celebrities in the world.
Right.
Every other day she's like, here's who hit me in the DM today. Like the biggest names.
Right.
You can think of like anyone. It seems like they all message her. And I'm just laughing. And none of it affects me.
Right.
Not one person who's messaged her, not one billionaire or mega celebrity or whatever, am I like threatened by or anything.
Because you're telling the truth.
I'm telling the truth. I'm giving her my all.
Right.
And I'm like, if it's not enough for you, then it's not the right fit.
But that's why it has
to
be self.
And I'm going to be okay.
That's why it has to be self-love.
Exactly.
Before it's love in a relationship.
I feel, this is the first time I feel 100% self-love for myself.
Yeah.
Where I don't want us to break up.
Right.
I want to be with her.
Right.
But I'm not going to sacrifice my own love for myself.
And by the way, just once again, build that bridge. You love her and you like her. You're her man, but you're also her friend. And so you want the same thing for her.
I want her to be happy.
If her truth doesn't match up for whatever reason.
Then find another great relationship and I want the best for you.
It's unconditional love.
I want the best for her.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be fine. She's going to be fine.
Right. By the way, it's easy to say. It's hard to do.
Easy to say.
But you can't do it unless you say it. You know?
That's because it. I think that's the thing. It's like, we've been in the transition. She's moved in. It's been a big like change for her. And I'm just like, I'm so committed to the process. I'm so committed to being patient and understanding and compassionate.
Yeah.
And loving her when there's stress or overwhelm for her or confusion. And not getting defensive or any of these things. And I feel like, you know, okay, if we go through this and it's consistent like this for 2 years, it's not gonna last.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I can't handle it for 2 years of just like chaos. So I
but
know there's going to be
seasons, like seasons. Everything.
There's going to be seasons. It's going to be over. But if it didn't be over, I would say, babe, I love you. I gave you everything. And I want the best for you. And you deserve, you know, I deserve something different. And so do you.
Right.
If you're not happy and I'm not happy, we shouldn't be together.
There are things in relationships that are non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that are negotiable.
Yeah.
And only you will know what's negotiable and what's non-negotiable. And, you know, certain things, seasons, you know, you're going to go through them. It's mm-hmm. very, very natural. And if you think that you're not,
right,
then you're actually not going to be committed to seeing what new truth can arise out of each of you individually and as, you know, out of the relationship. But then there are also certain things that wind up being unsustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, only you will know.
Some things, I mean, things can last for a season. They can't last for like multiple seasons back to back to back.
Right.
Of chaos, you know. So right. I'm curious for you. You've been in a relationship for 2 years now.
Pause.
What's been the biggest challenge? What's been the thing that's brought you together the most? Was it the beautiful moments in romance on a vacation or looking at the stars, you know, or was it when you went through something, you know, when your cat died and there was like a traumatic event that realized you brought you closer? What would you say?
I would say both.
Mm.
I mean, both have been equally as important because if I had one without the other, it might have been unsustainable, you know, like, or at least if everything was amazing all of the time, it would just be that. But the challenges that we've gone through together has deepened our relationships very, very much.
Yeah.
So, like, I really, you know, learning how to be with a partner in the good times is really important, but learning how you both show up in the bad times is necessary for
a more
lifelong
probably.
Relationship.
It's easy to be positive in the good times. It's hard to be positive during chaos.
Yeah. Or accept that you're not going to be positive in that moment and to fully be with the other person.
Mm-hmm. And learn to forgive if someone said something all
or
hurt
that,
you.
Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's intimacy is quite the process, but there's nothing else in the world that can open up your heart like giving it to someone else and allowing them to, you know, hold on to it for a little while.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I would say this is probably the best space you've been in your entire life. You're 40, you're 41?
41.
41. Yeah. I've known you for what, 8, 9 years maybe?
Yeah,
8 years,
been,
seven,
it's
eight?
It's been a minute.
When did we first meet? Do you remember?
I saw I you know at Summit. I know it was at Summit, but I don't remember
Eden,
what year.
Yeah. On stage, I think. Yeah. It was a small event at Eden for the first time, and I came up to you afterwards.
Right afterwards.
It was, I've only been to Eden once, but it was in like a small room. I don't know if they still have this building there, if this was before the mountain.
Yeah.
It was before the mountain. But anyways, it was kind of like a little cave room.
It was in between.
Yes.
The mountains at the top.
It was at the other resort, I think.
Yeah, it was right in between.
And you did a little session. I think there was only like 30 people in the room at the time. It was like a small, intimate thing. And I was like, who is this human being? When was that? 2012, maybe?
I think it was like 7 years ago.
Maybe. 2013, maybe?
Yeah.
And I was just like captivated by your energy and your creativity and your artistry. And you've had some good years, but I feel like the last couple of years you've been in the most calm space.
Yeah, for sure.
Even though you had a crazy cat.
I did have a crazy
cat.
But even that was a huge lesson for me.
Yeah, you had to surrender, right?
Yeah. Well, it was also, we had gotten this cat, and he was this amazing, amazing cat named Marley. And he was bananas, man.
Jumping all the walls.
Jumping all over. Like, he just, he wanted as much of life as he possibly could have. And at times, he would annoy me. I'd be like, dude, Marley, man, like, chill out, you know? And then he ended up getting a kidney thing. And his kidneys didn't grow. He was a kitten. Mm-hmm. And so his kidneys didn't grow with the rest of his body. And he went into a kidney failure. And we had to put him down. Mm. And that was a lesson for her and I, just how we dealt with it together. But also, he taught me a lesson that, you know, here I was, like, annoyed at him because he was trying to get as much of life as possible. But there must have been a part of him that knew he wasn't going to be around for mm-hmm. a very long time. And, you know, if I had known that at the time, I would have given him whatever he wanted to eat. I would have played with him literally as much as possible, yeah. you know. And that's a lesson that I certainly want to bring into the future, you know. Like, it's something that I held on to.
Yeah.
We don't know how long we're going to be here.
We don't know, man.
And, you know.
We don't know. How did the Kobe death affect you?
Well, I mean, Kobe
you
was...
You grew up in L.A.
Yeah. I mean, Kobe was the symbol of, like, invincibility, I would say. And so for him to pass in such a shocking way... made everyone stop. Mm. We were the exact same age. Mm. So, you know, when I see 1978,
wow, that's your
2000, it makes me reflect on my own journey as well. The other interesting thing was it was the same night of the Grammys mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, and in the same building mm-hmm. that was, you know, really his building. And you could feel it even watching it on television. I've been to the Grammys twice, and I was watching on television, and his passing cut through the spectacle. It cut through the illusion, and there was a deeper presence to everyone who took the stage that night, because mortality was front of mind.
In this amazing book that you have, which is a collection of all your poems, Inquire Within, you say you talk about issues of love, loss, forgiveness, transformation, and belief. Which one of those five universal issues have you deepened in the last year the most? Love, loss, forgiveness, transformation, and belief. Which one has impacted you the most or risen to the forefront the most?
I mean, definitely love, you know, and that's the overarching theme of everyone's life, is learning how to love throughout all of the ups and downs, and coming back to love. But I would say love and, you know, all of them have deepened, you know. I mean, we should be so lucky to have all of these major themes of life continue to deepen over time. Yeah.
What's the greatest love poem that you think you have? Is it the 85 or the one in the home? Which one is?
It's one that I'm actually working on right now.
A new one?
Yeah, I have a new one.
Is it finished yet?
No,
it's not in the book. Of the ones in the book, what's the greatest love poem?
Probably 85 or When It's Right. Both of those I think I'm really happy with. And I wrote them at different stages of my life. But they were a manifestation at the time that I wrote them. They were almost like exploring what I would want. And now it's really beautiful to be able to be living some of the poems that I wrote.
So you wrote these poems as kind of like dream lives.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to have this in the future because you didn't have it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all of my poems is they're prayers. Mm. I'm talking to myself, you know, like they're reminders to myself of the life that I want to live. And so then when I get an opportunity to get up and share them with other people, I'm talking to myself first, and almost people are observing me doing that to myself, you know, and hopefully seeing their own humanity in that mirror. Hmm.
Which one do you want to share with us? Which love poem?
You pick.
What's the second one you said?
When It's Right.
When It's Right. Have I heard that one?
I'm sure you have.
Probably have.
At some point. Yeah.
85 is always so good. But let's hear the When It's Right.
Okay. When It's Right. Falling in love is like finding a home in the heart of a person that you've never known. It's the waiting for the ring of the phone when you're alone, or making them a mixtape of all your favorite songs. Remember how it felt when their touch made you melt, when their presence made you a better version of yourself. When your bed was like an island in the middle of the sea, and their eyes were the only sunset you could see. When their smile was enough to inspire a forever in this lifetime of learning how to love each other better. It's beyond words. It's knowing how she takes her tea. It is knowing when to challenge her and when to let her be. It is knowing when to hold her and when to set her free. It is chemistry and honesty, empathy, integrity, and humility. It is calling when I'm going to be late, or giving her the last bite of cake from my plate. It is going on vacations and walking along the beach. It's the sound that she makes when she laughs in her sleep. It is real, especially when it's hard, because we have chosen to reveal who we really are. Beautiful with all our scars. You're like a sky of stars. I've never felt as infinite as when you're in my arms. I'd never felt as intimate as when I was in your charms. I'd never met someone and instantly knew I belonged. So now the songs on the radio are making more sense. And every rom-com movie seems more intense. I'm having dreams that I'm painting her a picket fence. Our kids are playing on the lawn, still in innocence, picturesque in every sense. It's like a Norman Rockwell. It feels so real. A modern fairy tale with a pool and barbecue grill. We'll have a two-car garage, and every week she'll get a gift certificate for one free foot massage. And when we've had a hard day, we'll go and walk it off. And when we've had a hard night, we'll get some Haagen-Dazs. We'll put our goals on a list and then we'll cross them off. I'll take some pics of our kids, then print them up and make a Mother's Day collage or send her flowers just because. Her skin is the closest that I've been to God. See, love is like a long ladder up to heaven. It's like a dance where you move apart and then come back together. It is sunshine and stormy weather, because you would never know the one unless you knew the other. And in the end, you'll be old and gray with a pair of rocking chairs and some grand marnier, grandkids on a grand piano in the foyer, photographs of your family filling the hallway, and everybody in the neighborhood will ask you for advice. So you'll slowly lean in, then you'll look around twice. Then you'll whisper real light like it was the secret to your life. When you know, you know. Because when it's right, it's right. I want to fall in love at 85. Go on shuffleboard dates and dance to hip hop from 95. We would also listen to the song Staying Alive, but only for the message. Otherwise, we'd keep away from disco. It's depressing. We'd rock matching tracksuits and rope gold chains. We'd look like Run-DMC, but in their old age. We'd take aerobics classes and wear bifocal glasses and eat at IHOP and hold hands at Sunday masses. And when it comes to the bedroom, well, nothing much would happen in the bedroom because we're 85. But we would still be down to take a walk or take a drive or sit and talk and have a drink, watch the passers-by, ask each other why and how and who and where and when. And then we'd laugh and cry again about the people we had been. And I would touch her withered skin and comment on how thin it is to keep in something infinite. And she would smile sweet and blush, then tell me that I think too much. She's right. I think too much. It's always been a problem. But then again, that's how I made my green like the goblin. When I was in my 20s, I was eating top ramen, counting up my pennies, saving up to go food shopping. But now I'm 85. And somehow I feel more alive. I turn my hearing aid up and bump Jurassic 5. I read the sports page while she peruses classifieds. We like antique stores, garage sales, and barter buys. And when it comes to the bedroom, well, hopefully, every once in a while, she lets me knock her boots into the floral patterns of our bedpost, then hold her head close like death isn't chasing us, planning on erasing us and replacing us with better versions of us, reshaping us, remaking us, then recreating us with new identities so we can make new memories. Hush, little baby, learn to walk and talk and think and lie and feel and fight and love and die and never get the answers why. She dips a joint of grass and wheatgrass and we get high. Her hair is silver as the moon in the Miami sky. We still pop pills, but it's not the Molly anymore. Whenever we can't sleep, we listen to the ocean floor. She got a sound of the sea CD for me from the Brookstone store. And ever since, I've been snoring like a really good metaphor for snoring. Sorry, I go blank sometimes. What? I'm 85. I'm not complaining. I'm just happy that I'm still alive. And happy that I have my better half by my side. Mm. Superfly. She doesn't look a day over 75. When I first saw her, I was totally in awe. She was classical. So I was like, yo, yo, ma. And that was all it took. A single look and I was shook. I fell for her like some loose shingles from our Spanish roof. And I'm a lover till she loses every last root and has to glue dentures to her gums to chew solid food. Ooh. Now that's real love, dude. That's some push comes to shove love. Not when it's convenient, love. Hospital bed, love. Feed her ice chips, love. Never leave the room, love. Sleeping in the chair, love. Pray to up above, love. Have to pull the plug. Miss her in my bones, love. Everything about her, love. Die within a month, love. Can't live without her, love. Love. The only reason that we're alive. And none of us should have to wait until we're 85.
My man. it's amazing, man. You always get me emotional with that.
Thank you.
That was two poems back to back, right?
I just kind of wore
them in. I saw that. Do you feel like you feel more love for yourself and more are willing to receive more love now than ever before?
Yeah. Let me ask you, though, what makes you emotional about it? Like,
I think I'm just a sensitive person in general.
Yeah.
So the story of really caring about someone for that long and being there for them through all the different challenges, having all the fun, being high on life and then not being able to do certain things anymore, but talking about it and then having to have her leave. For me, it's like very sad to like think of that moment.
Yeah.
Or someone to be gone.
Yeah.
When you have so much love for them.
Yeah.
So
it's a part of the human experience. It's it it's kind of what makes everything so beautiful.
Yeah.
Is that we have to deal with loss. If loss wasn't a part of life, you know, we wouldn't appreciate mm-hmm. the moments and the love that we have.
Have you had a lot of loss?
I've had my share. Yeah.
Did you feel like, because you didn't grow up with your dad, did you feel like you lost? He was around, but you didn't see him, right?
He wasn't around.
But no. I mean, he was alive.
He was alive, yeah.
But you didn't see him for 15 years or something, is that right?
I met him for the first time when I was 15.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you create a sense of love and safety in a relationship if your father was never there? How did you learn that?
Various degrees of success and failure. Probably more failure, you know, but each time I learned a little bit more about what intimacy was to me and how I was showing up in ways that I wanted to improve and then how I wasn't showing up. The first time I went out with my girlfriend, at the end of the night, we were sitting on a porch and we were like having tea. And she asked me, she was like, so how old are you? And I was like, I guess I was 39.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm 39. She goes, okay. She said, you've never been married.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. And she said, you don't have any kids. And I was like, no. And then she stopped for a second and then she goes, why? And what she was basically asking was, what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, she should have been asking that question.
Right.
It was a totally appropriate question for her to ask. But I wasn't going to answer that.
Right.
I didn't feel good about answering that. Mm-hmm. So I actually said, you know, I'm uncomfortable answering that. And then we had this like awkward moment.
Not what he talked about.
You know, and that was that. And the date kind of ended. And now, you know, 2 years later, I know the answer to that. And it was because I was waiting to feel like it was right.
Mm.
And those poems, as I said, they were manifestations for what I wanted to create in my life. But at the time, the answer to that would have been scary because I wasn't sure why I'd waited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had been with amazing women.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't able to say I wanted to take the long walk. And I didn't quite feel like I had found home.
Hmm. When did you know it felt like home with your current girlfriend?
When people get into relationships at the beginning, they tend to just project onto each other. And I have done this over and over and over again. Where you meet someone and, you know, they have a few points, you know, like almost like data points. That you say, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And you see those points, and then you just fill in the rest, you know, with your own illusion, right? Your own projection. And they do the exact same thing, and then you're not even really meeting each other.
No, you have an expectation that's not met.
Exactly.
On both sides.
Well, but that doesn't usually come up for a while,
mm-hmm.
because at the beginning in this honeymoon phase,
it's been coming up now for me.
Right. Well, it so always like, does.
Wait, no, I don't have that expectation. And
it always communicate.
Yeah.
Because then what winds up happening is we resent the other person mm-hmm. for not living up to our unspoken and imaginary uh-huh. expectation
that they're supposed to know and live up to,
or be. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why when you are with someone, you mirror them right away. You know, if you like someone. You know, you start to mirror everybody, you know, you're doing all the dancing, and that's what a first date is,
yeah.
you know? And ultimately that stuff winds up unfolding. I will say with the woman that I'm with now, we spent a long enough time dating without putting that expectation on each other. We both had other things that we were working through in our lives, and so we didn't put that pressure on
nice.
Our connection. And honestly, it's the first time that I've ever done that.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I fell in love with her, and I knew I was starting to fall in love with her, I knew her. Like, I already knew who she was. It wasn't this projection or this mm-hmm. fantasy, you know.
You knew the things you liked about her, the things you didn't like about her, the everything.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know everything. We're two years deep and I'm still learning an enormous amount. But definitely I knew who I was falling in love with, not my fantasy of who I was falling in love with.
Or just the best parts of it or whatever.
Exactly. And so I think, I don't know how that relates back to the father question that you initially asked. I mean, if I was to answer that, I would say intimacy has always been a really big issue for me. And learning how to be intimate has been one of the biggest gifts for not only my romantic life and my personal life, but also for my career and also for my art.
How has being in love helped you in your art and on stage perform differently?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the same way that you want something from a relationship at the beginning and you start to project, really ultimately it's about wanting love and validation. Somebody that you think is attractive, being attracted to you, you know, having this imagination of this life partner and then saying, well, I'm ready, so this person has to be that, you know? When I get up in front of an audience, I still want to be liked.
Of course.
I still want them to love my work. I still want them to validate my ego. You know, people talk about getting rid of your ego. You can't get rid of your ego. Your ego is a part of your humanity.
Right.
But you can learn how to not navigate from it, you know, or operate
or
from that place.
Or be driven by it, yeah.
Exactly. So I would say when I used to get up in front of an audience, I was more performing to them. And I almost would, in doing that, even if they were totally connected to what I was saying, it would make them lean back. And I had all of these tricks that I would use that I learned along the way.
Techniques.
Yeah.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all on its own. With a premium Bang and a Lufsen sound system, and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours today at Acura.com.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
It would make an amazing show, but they actually were getting in the way of the ultimate communication. And so once that self-love started to kick in, and a lot of that was and is continuing to be learned in the relationship, when I'm in front of an audience now, I can acknowledge that I do want them to be connected to what I'm saying, but I don't try to control their experience. I'm much more energetically contained. You know, if you even think about like what a single person is like, you're out in the world and oftentimes, if you're looking for a partner, your energy is going all over the place, man. You know? I mean, it's like you see somebody you're attracted to and you give them your energy and you don't even know who the fuck they are.
Right.
You know, you're like giving your energy away. You know, my energy is very contained now in my romantic life. I don't give it away at all. I could see someone and say, oh, that's an attractive person, but I don't give them my energy.
And as opposed to when you're single, you might be giving it to lots of different people.
Or even fantasizing within yourself.
Right.
You know, and I don't that at all, you know. And I would say it's the same thing for being on the stage. I don't want to split my energy. You know, even if weirdly enough, man, I'm really branching out on this answer, mm-hmm. but like if I used to see someone in the audience that I perceived that was not into it, I would give them my energy.
And be like, I'm going to make you into
it. Exactly.
I'm going to captivate you.
Exactly.
Stare at them.
Yeah.
Go walk up next to them and get them engaged.
It's exhausting.
Instead of focusing on the people that are giving you their energy.
Or just focusing on myself, which allows the audience to then lean in. Mm-hmm. Because who am I to tell them how to think or how to feel or whether or not to enjoy this or whether or not to like me?
Yeah. And you might have an expectation of what you want the audience to respond to. And when they don't do it, it might affect you or might have affected you.
Exactly. And then I'm not actually in the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually there. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, I think it's the difference between codependent love and unconditional love. What I'm trying to do with my audience right now is unconditionally love myself and unconditionally love them.
How do you do that before you go on stage then? How do you step into loving yourself and not expecting a response at different moments or a standing ovation or laughter or whatever?
I think it's just the awareness of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that there's anything to do. I think it's more that it's a reminder so that it's something I can be.
And what do you need to be?
Present. I mean, I wrote all of these things because I was inspired or I was moved or I was annoyed. They all come from a place of truth. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same thing that you were talking about with your partner. You know, she gave you the permission to be truthful.
Yeah.
Or the invitation to be truthful. And you wanted the same thing from her. I am the vehicle and the obstacle to these poems coming into the world. I'm the vehicle because they have to come through my experience and I have to be there to give them away, or someone has to buy this book, Inquire Within, to be able to experience it. Mm-hmm. But I'm also the obstacle because those needs that I have can get in the way of the communication of that truth.
Yeah.
And the poems have something that they want to say. So I want to try to be of service to that as much as I can.
Why do you think poetry is getting this comeback? It's like it's more mainstream now.
Yeah.
There's different poets who are writing books that are becoming bestsellers, yeah. that are reaching millions of people. People are writing poetry on Instagram that's being connected to the heart or to something.
Yeah.
And they're becoming, you know, popular.
Yeah.
There's a handful of them. And yeah, you've been doing this for 20 years?
A long time, yeah.
18, 20, something like that.
I started when I was 19. I wound up at the Poetry Lounge.
22 years.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a cool thing.
Well, it was for us. You know, we had an amazing, amazing community, man. I mean, some of the best art experiences I've ever had were in the audience watching another poet on the stage. I mean, bar none.
But it wasn't mainstream then. It was more like an
underground. It was starting to be mainstream. Thing. And then it never quite crossed over. It, you know, deaf poetry was huge, man. Mm. Deaf poetry did huge numbers. And then it won a Tony on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was an opportunity at that point to really blow poetry up. But for whatever reason, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Not on the level that I believe it can and that it's starting to now again.
Why do you think it's starting to now? Is it social media? Is it the books are just that amazing that people are writing? Because there's been great poetry right. books for hundreds of years, I feel like.
Right. I definitely think social media has something to do with it. Uh-huh. And then also I think, you know, look at the life that we're living, man. You know, we're
stressful.
Very, very disconnected.
Stressful.
Yeah. I mean, think about how consumerism trains us to validate ourselves by the external world. You know, it's always trying to take something from you. It's mm-hmm. trying to take your attention. It's trying to take your
money,
time, likes,
feelings,
love, you know, information mm-hmm. even now. You know, and so everything is always trying to take from you. And we're trained to look for the answers outside of ourselves. And then we have so much stimulus. We're bombarded by stimulus that we can't ever find a moment to just be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I wrote all of these poems from that place of truth. So I don't strategize my inspiration.
It's what you're feeling.
I pay attention mm-hmm. to what I'm inspired to, and then I follow that breadcrumb trail. And so writing this book actually was an opportunity for me to see what I've been trying to say all of these years.
What have you been trying to say?
I think part of the conversation that we're having now, that, you know, I mean, technology is this amazing thing. It's connected the entire world, and simultaneously, people are feeling more isolated than ever. You know, they're on their own little islands, and they do not feel like they're a part of this larger community. Mm-hmm. And if I don't know something, what do I do? I go look on Google.
Yeah.
You know, or I seek out an expert. You know, or I read a book, or I listen to a podcast. Mm-hmm. And all of these things are amazing tools, but there is a difference between using tools and having those tools use you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Inquire Within is what I had to do to create this book. It's what...
And every poem.
Every poem.
Yeah.
It's an invitation for the person to inquire within the pages and to inquire within themselves. Because, you know, if you have something going on in your life that you can't figure out, yes, you can search outside of yourself for that, but you can also find moments of silence, you know, be in nature. And allow that true voice that you have inside of you to come up to the surface, because that is the voice of your passion, your mm-hmm. purpose, your enthusiasm. And I hope that this book is a window into that for people.
What's the poem that you have in here that talks about technology and our devices and the stress that we're facing with all the technological advances?
You know, I have a poem, but I actually didn't put it in the book. And it was a poem about addiction. And the whole entire time, I mean, I've had my own issues, but the whole entire time in this particular poem is the thing I'm addicted to, the thing I'm addicted to. And then in the end, it winds up being the phone. But I actually don't remember that piece.
Is there a piece in the book you remember that talks about what that last conversation we just had?
No, it's really the culmination
mm-hmm.
of... All of the work in the book is that message.
Is that message.
You know? And really, as I said, it's a window. Because Inquire Within, there's no answers in here. You know? There's just my life experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's me sharing the things that I've gone through and the roadmap that I've used to get here.
Yeah.
You know? And to be here.
Who have you had to forgive the most? Is it the father experience? Is it a past girlfriend? Is it yourself?
I think.
Is it the universe?
No, I mean the universe. It's like, you know, getting mad at God is like yelling at yourself in the mirror. You know, it's like no matter what you say, God will be waiting for you when you are done.
Wow. Yeah.
You know? So, but I do think that I've had to forgive myself for things that I've done in my life. There's plenty of ways that I've behaved that I'm not proud of. And yet you do better when you know more.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've learned a lot over the years. And I would say my father, you know, I really, like, who would I be without that experience?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been so integral to the life that I've lived. I mean, even growing up without a dad, it made me, you know, an observer. You know, it made me think, what am I supposed to be like? Which started kind of that analytical part of me that is, I think, led me to being the writer and performer that I am.
Where do you think you'd be if your dad was always there, loving, supportive?
You know, it's impossible for me to predict or to even, like, explore because it's... who knows, man?
Do you think you'd be a poet and an artist in this way, creating this type of content?
I don't think that I would be a poet in the way that I am, because I think that when you had things that were very painful growing up, I think it forces you to look at your life from the outside looking in. And you know, if you don't have that, you know, you don't necessarily start to ask questions about yourself or your environment until much later. I was always thinking about, you know, what was going on with me and So I think that, as I said, led me to being the writer that I am.
Where do you think poetry is going over the next 10 years? As a new decade starts and there's, again, books coming out and viral videos and all these things happening, do you think it's going to be hot in 10 years?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, as big of a genre as anything else. I think poets definitely can be on the cover of magazines. Like you are. I saw you in the airport yesterday.
There should, why don't you create a poet magazine?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's, just, you know, on our mind.
It's a lot of work, though, but yeah.
You know, look, the reason that I even created this book is I have an amazing friend who's a poet, Rudy Francisco. He's an unbelievable poet. And he was on Jimmy Fallon. Mm-hmm. And we'd been trying to get on, you know, different late night things. And
he said, you got to write a book.
Yeah. Because literally the genre of poetry is not something that they will book you for, but they can book you as an author and then you can perform your poetry. So it's almost like this Trojan horse of getting poetry into popular culture and changing people's perception of what it is and what it can be. You know, poets should be able to have their own sitcoms and, mm-hmm. and everything like that. And I think that it's more necessary now than ever because when people get up and use their voice, they inspire other people to do the same. And there's nothing to get in the way of the words and the message in poetry. Mm-hmm. There's just the words and the message and the person speaking. And, you know, with this tool of the internet, people really do need to be using their voice as much as possible, but not to tear down, to build up and to speak about the things that are important to them. I think it's time.
Why do we tear down so much in general? Publicly, behind people's backs, where does that come from and how do we switch it?
You know, it feels good to hate together. It's almost like it's love.
Wow.
But it's not.
It's almost like it's love to hate together.
Yeah, man. People love to have a common enemy. They love to tear things down. You know, it's easy. You know, it's much harder to alchemize your negative energy and create something with it than it is to just go, it's their fault, or, you know, this person, judge them, you know, all of that. It's much, much easier to do that than it is to actually create something with that energy and put it out into the world. But when you do that, that's when you allow other people to feel less alone. And art, poetry in general, I mean, it inspires empathy, and empathy is what the world needs most right now.
Yeah. Where do you think things are going to go into this next year? I don't really talk about politics much, but where do you think people's voices, I think, are going to be talking a lot in the next, this year? Yeah. It's the election year, right?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know anything 100%. About this, right? It's like, I don't follow the news of what's happening, but I just see little bits here and there of people complaining.
Yeah.
What's your prediction of just the energy of the country and the world with this next election? Not who's going to win or this and that, but just the energy. And what do you think we need to be doing as a collective in order to make sure it's the best possible outcome, energy-wise?
That's very, very difficult to answer. You know, it's a very difficult question to answer
because there's so much negativity.
It makes me want to get into the political conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's so much negativity, I feel like, behind the scenes. I'm not involved in it, but there's so much negativity talking about something people don't like on all different sides.
Yeah.
How, like, is that ever going to change? Is that going to be here forever?
I think we're in an interesting moment in America and an interesting moment in the world. I really do. You know, I mean, look, every generation feels like the world is going to end, right? Every single generation feels like, in some way, like the world is going to end. This is the most important moment. And it's because their mortality is in question. Mm. And as they get older, there's this egocentric thing that I think happens where you think, if I'm not here, nothing can be here. Mm. And so, you know, there's this sense of the world is going to end because I'm going to end, right? But I will say this particularly is a very important moment for the world with climate change, with populism. You know, if an alien spaceship showed up right now, we would all be human beings first. Immediately. Nothing would matter. Our
like
politics
coming to attack
wouldn't matter.
Us, you mean? A spaceship coming to attack us.
Attack, not attack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If a flying saucer came down,
we would
look at each other all of a sudden and be like, oh, it's you and me.
We're in this together.
Yes, exactly. And I almost feel that climate change is that big of an existential crisis for humanity, where it's really the thing that could possibly bring humanity together and we have an opportunity to evolve, or it could be a thing where as the environment changes and resources change, climate refugees start to be searching for places, we devolve. And I think you're seeing that play out in politics right now. You know, I think you're seeing, you know, us versus them, you know, happen in a very major way. And what I hope is that we're able to realize that we're all in this together. I mean, climate change doesn't give a f*** about our nations.
No.
It doesn't care about our races. It doesn't care about anything.
Our money.
Yeah.
It feels like we've been talking about climate change for a long time.
Yeah.
20, 30, 50 years. Researchers, scientists. Al Gore's been talking about it for 20 years. I feel like creating 20. Movies. Like, it feels like there's been urgency for a while, but it's more so now, right?
I mean,
like, is there ever going to be a moment you think we change and start changing policies and actually doing different things?
We would have to approach it the way that we would approach a world war.
Yeah.
I mean,
there has to be lots of deaths probably for us to really change, though.
There has to be some sort of a catalyst that allows the collective consciousness to say we have no other choice but to work together to reverse the damages that we've been doing.
Why does it seem like in life we need something drastic to happen in order to change? Like dramatic, a death, a loss, an injury, a breakup for us to look and acquire within and say, okay, what do we need to do to change?
Because our patterns are so deeply ingrained. You know, I talk about this in the book, you know, the differences between ideas and ideologies, and how ideas are basically things that, you know, they're tools that you can use in your life that changes your truth and your experience changes. But ideologies are different because they calcify, and then you have to force everything in your reality into the frame of these ideologies. Otherwise, you will lose control over the ideology. And if the ideology has become a part of your identity, then you're losing control of your identity. It's an ego death, man.
You gotta kill it.
You have to kill a part of yourself to change your mind. I mean, think about how crazy that sounds.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
When you can look at it from the outside in. And so I think that people have these ingrained set patterns, and, you know, normal things will not shake them or wake them out of that sleep. It has to be something traumatic that allows them to go, whoa, okay, let me actually look around at what's happening, not my, once again, projection of what's happening.
Yeah.
So that I can see if I want to make some different choices. That's an individual thing. And I think it's the same thing on a collective and humanity basis.
Yeah. It just sucks that it takes something drastic to happen in our own lives for us to make a change.
And by the way, some people have that traumatic event and they still don't change.
They still hold on to it.
they still hold on to it. They keep the same behavior. They continue to create the same lesson in a different disguise over and over and over again. And they blame everyone else for what's going on. And they wind up at the end of their lives taking that into whatever the next realm is. You know, so I think, as I said, this is an opportunity. It's really unfortunate that we had to create this type of an opportunity for us to change our collective perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, the time is now.
It is, yeah.
Because at a certain point, it will be too late collectively.
To reverse.
To reverse.
Think so? Wow.
I mean, that's what the scientists are saying.
Oh, man. I'm curious, if you could only share one poem with the world and then you were going to die, and this is the only poem you could share, and they wouldn't have any other poems to read from this
book. Wow, that's deep.
Or any other poems you've ever written.
That's a deep question.
No one would have access to them. What would that poem be that you would share to the world, and this is all they have for the rest of their life, of yours? What would that poem be?
So the two poems, because it really does represent the two parts of the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this book has these two parts. It's inhale and it's exhale.
Yep.
And, you know, and by the way, as you're looking at it, there's 60 illustrations in here.
Yeah, we were,
you know, I'm so unbelievably excited about this piece. Anyway, so the first part is personal poems, you know, and the second part is social and political.
Mm-hmm.
So, the piece about my father called Father Time is the personal thing, because I think that's what woke me up out of my illusion and allowed me to start seeing the world around me rather than my projection of myself and other people. And then I would say One Little Dot, which is about climate change, because, you know, I mean, the president during the State of the Union didn't mention it one time. I mean,
doesn't think about it.
It's the biggest existential threat to humanity right now, and it wasn't even mentioned.
It's so, an afterthought.
Yeah.
It's not even talked about, yeah.
Yeah. And I would say that poem is about taking ownership over it, you know, rather than making it someone else's problem. And it's something I'm still working on a daily basis.
Taking ownership of it yourself?
Yeah.
In what ways?
Just in what I'm deciding
decisions
to eat.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, for sure.
What are you changing?
Well, I cut out meat.
All meat?
I still do fish, but yeah. Yeah.
When did that happen?
About 6 or 7 months ago.
Really?
I'm actually ashamed that it took me so long, you know, but I felt like, I mean, it's one of the biggest things that we can do individually. You know, who am I waiting for? You know, but there are other ways as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm happy to share either one of those or whatever.
Was there a trigger that finally made you say, okay, like, I want to make this decision about meat? Was there like a documentary or just a conversation, or is it just like, okay, now's the time, I got to do something?
Yeah, I think it was more just like, me really taking a look at my life and realizing that I wasn't, you know, it's like, it's so easy to talk about something. It's much harder to sacrifice, you know, and that's why we basically like trick ourselves into not sacrificing anything personally, even for the things that we believe in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to change, and by the way, once again, various degrees of success and failure. I am definitely, you know, not a product. I'm a process, and I'm figuring this out in real time. But like even the other day, I had a water bottle, you know, and as I was drinking it, I felt like ashamed.
A plastic water bottle.
Yeah. You know, and that was a new thing for me where I was like, good. I'm glad I feel ashamed because I need to be aware that, you know, there are consequences. When you throw out trash, where do you think it goes? It doesn't go anywhere, man.
Right.
You know, it just basically like leaves where you are.
Somewhere
like,
else.
Yeah. Imagine like all the trash
so
that
much
we use in a year. Personally.
Trillions of tons of waste every year.
Yeah, but me.
Personal. It's all the bags
if
every week.
If it was all in my house or in my area, I mean, it would be insane. But I get to go, I'm going to put it over there. And I get to walk away. But it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it was just me realizing that it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to be about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots more that I can do.
There's levels of it, yeah.
But it's about personal sacrifice and taking pride in that. So that, like, instead of me being like, oh, I'm sacrificing something, that I actually go, no, I'm like taking a proactive step for something that I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's great.
And there's a lot of other people that are around me that are way more advanced and way more evolved and are leading the way for me. But yeah, it's something that I wanted to try to put into my own life.
It's amazing, man. There's always levels of things we can do to be better. And it's like, I think not shaming yourself.
Mm.
Shaming yourself a little bit is good, but not being like, okay, well, I had the plastic water bottle and what's on my shoe. It's like, then you have to think about every little decision. Like, where's this brand made from?
Right.
And who's making it? And is there, you know, there's
I think that
levels.
There's a difference. There's always levels. And there's a difference between, you know, acknowledging that something doesn't feel good and taking a good look at not who you think you are, but who you actually are in a moment.
Yeah.
And then vilifying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you should vilify yourself.
Right.
I mean, we're all just trying to figure this shit out.
Right.
You know, and we're all going through this human shit together.
But it's being acknowledging it and saying, that's not the way I want to be. I'm going to make a different decision moving
forward.
Yeah.
Exactly. Rather than ignoring it so that I can keep getting whatever it is that I want in the most convenient possible way.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to finish with Father Time, but before we do, I want to make sure you guys get this book. It's going to really inspire you, so make sure to check this out. NQ's spoken at the Summit, I think, three times? Summit of Greatness?
Yeah.
Three of the 4 years you spoke at.
And every time I've done different poems.
It's amazing. You got 4 standing ovations last year at Summit of Greatness?
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
Well, you have a great audience, man.
It's amazing.
I keep coming back because I love you.
I
respect you.
Thank you, brother.
I love watching you build, man.
Thanks, man.
I was saying before we started that, like, when you see people that you care about succeed, it's almost better than your own personal successes.
Yeah.
You know, because I looked at you on the cover of the magazine when I was in the airport the other day, and it filled me with joy.
That's good, man.
And I love what you're putting out into the world.
Thank you.
You know, because I do know that you're impacting people on a daily basis. And it's very, very difficult to quantify that impact. I mean, you might get DMs or someone might come up to you on the street, but
you never know who's listening or watching reading. You never know.
And you never know how it actually shapes or shifts something in their life in reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to think something or feel something. If someone comes up to me and says, I loved your show, I felt, that's amazing. But when someone comes up to me and says they made a different decision in their life that led them to more joy or happiness or gratitude or forgiveness.
Love,
that's the ultimate.
It's amazing. Yeah, thank you, brother. Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully we get you back this year again. I love the subtitle, if you change the present, you change the past and the future.
Yeah.
I've never heard it say that way.
Yeah.
When you focus on changing the present, you change the past.
Yeah. Because if you change the present, if you change a pattern or
the
behavior,
narrative or the story.
Yes. Then immediately the past changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your perception of the past changes, and therefore the past actually changes. And then the future changes because what you're bringing into your life, your frequency changes. And so then what you're attracted to and what you're attracting shifts.
It's beautiful.
So it happens simultaneously.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Make sure you guys get the book, Inquire Within. They can follow you on Instagram, NQ.
NQ Life.
NQ Life. Yeah. Website, nqlife.com.
No, website is in-q.
in-q.com.
Yeah.
I think you're doing a book tour too.
Yeah, we're doing a big show in LA, in New York, in San Francisco. We'll do DC and you know, we have other dates, but right now those are the top ones.
So if you love his poetry, what you're about to hear, Father Time, what you heard before, then make sure to go watch you live. And you can get all that on in-q.com.
Yeah.
Social
media.
And
I want to say too, you know, like, this is the first time I've ever had a home for my art.
I know, I've been telling you for years.
You have, and you've been pushing me in that direction, and yet we're not ready until we're ready.
It's true.
But your voice was always like a good external shove
to
push me towards creating. And so basically these have always been living, breathing documents that have changed as I've changed.
Mm-hmm.
And now I finally can give them away,
mm.
you know, and in giving them away, it's almost been a mini death for me so that it can finally have life for other people.
Wow. Because you only performed them on stage and then they were gone.
Yeah.
And then a year or two ago, you started doing videos that went viral of some of them.
Yeah.
But not all of them.
Exactly.
And now you have your best ones here.
Yeah.
And they are going to move you. So.
Yeah. And the audiobook too.
Oh, you record the whole audiobook.
Literally.
In performance mode.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. So get the audiobook. It comes out March 31st, so you can pre-order it if this is coming out before.
And by the way, if you get it, hit me up on social media.
Tag him.
You know, tag me.
Take a photo.
Spread the word.
Tag him. You're going to love the poems. Let's finish with the father time.
I'm staring at the number wondering if I should call. I can hear the tick-tock from the clock on the wall as it meshes with the thump-thump beat of my heart. Sometimes getting something started is the hardest part. I didn't meet my dad until I was 15. I'd seen his photograph, but his image was sickening. A coward with a dick, but no balls to back it up.
Mm.
See, when he left me as a kid, I had cause for acting up. The funny thing about hate is the person you hate doesn't feel that hate. You feel that hate, but wait. The weight can be too much for a person to take, and personally I was hurt, so I just locked it away. I was angry all the time, and I didn't know why. I couldn't handle my own rage, so I would hide it inside. Pretending everything was fine became a daily pastime. Time passed, and I started to believe in my own lies. I took it out on my mom because she raised me alone. The rage that I couldn't own had left me totally numb. It was like landmines in my mind that I didn't understand. So when the boy inside cried, the young man outside yelled.
Mm.
I think I learned about my masculinity from TV. The people weren't real, so I knew they couldn't leave me. I would sit there for hours right in front of the tube. The images that I saw were my depiction of truth. It was manhood in a box, and I bought into it. The censorship of anything inside of me that's sensitive. The sentence is a lifetime of tears suppressed in a stone face, an overblown ego they've distracted through a paper chase. Back when I was 9, I imagined in my mind that my father was a spy working for the FBI, and that's why he couldn't stop by, write or drop a line. He was off saving our lives from the bad guys. But that was just a lie that I used to get by so that you wouldn't see the tears welling up in my eyes when you're rejected by the person that you created by. You secretly feel like you don't have a right to your life.
Mm.
I thought if I confronted him, then it would make it all right. But since I couldn't forgive him, it just recycled my spite. I remember meeting him for the first time. Every time a person passed by, I would ask, "Mom, is that him?"
Hmm.
I look a little like him, right? No? Oh. What about that guy? And that was what it was like to meet the man that gave me my life. To shake his hand and look into his eyes. We talked till he apologized, then said our goodbyes. I walked away on my own, and I began to cry. Now, for years after that, I acted like it was all resolved. I told him what I thought, so I figured problem solved, but it just re-evolved. My insecurities were eating at my mental health. I took it out on the world because I hated myself. That's when I finally decided I needed some help. I opened up. I started writing about my past. I got honest with myself and I started chipping at my mask. I looked into the mirror and confronted what I saw, accepting the reflection by embracing every flaw, then directing the connection into breaking down the walls by reflecting the perfection of the God inside us all. I stopped focusing on everything that I had been hateful for and started focusing on everything I could be grateful for. And personally, there is a lot I can be thankful for. If pain is dragging you down, just cut the ankle cord. It's when the weight lifted and I really started living. It's when my hate shifted and I really started giving. It's when my fate twisted. It was like an ego exorcism. Your mind state can be the most powerful of prisons. My father never played catch with me or gave advice. But if nothing else, that man gave me my life. And that's enough for me. If that is all he could ever give. Because I'm appreciative for every day I get to live. And even though I don't need my dad to validate me, I thought that I should write this poem to thank him for creating me. Because every moment that we are alive is like a gift. And if that's not enough to forgive, then what is? I'm staring at the number, wondering if I should call. I can hear the tick-tock from the clock on the wall as it meshes with the thump-thump beat of my heart. Sometimes getting something started is the hardest part. I pick the phone up. The dial tone begins to sing. I punch his number into it and it begins to ring. 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 Hello, Mike. Hey, man. It's Adam. Your son.
My man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man.
Powerful, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shit.
What did that make you think or feel?
I need to go see my dad more. He got in an accident 15 years ago, car accident. He was in a coma for 3 months.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I was 21.
Yeah.
And so he woke up 3 months later. He was in New Zealand on vacation with his girlfriend at the time. My parents got divorced when I was a teenager. And then he came home when he couldn't speak for many months. He was learning how to write his name. We had to, you know, take him to the bathroom and change his diaper. So I had to become a father to my father and teach him how to walk, how to talk. 21.
Wow.
So, yeah, I had to teach him. We had to teach him all these things. You know, he couldn't even. We were like just trying to have him throw a ball like just a few feet, just like to learn everything on how to be a human. And he had amnesia, so he didn't remember who a lot of us were. So it was always like having
that
to tell him.
Hard.
So it's been 15 years now, almost 15 years, 14 years.
Wow, to look at your dad and have him not know who you are.
Yeah, so it's been 14 years. He's come a long way. He's still alive. You can have normal conversation with him, but he gets very tired after about an hour of talking with him. He just like wants to sit around and watch TV.
Yeah.
So he's a man who was always full of life, super excited, giving, cared about his kids, to not caring anymore about life or his kids, really. And also, I can't blame him because he had a car, he got a car accident where the car came through the window and hit him in the forehead. So he had traumatic brain injury. So just functions of his brain don't work that well. So it's just, it's hard because it's like I lost my dad, but he's still alive. So every year, one of the reasons I started Summit of Greatness was to have an opportunity to go home so he could come in Columbus, Ohio, where he lives, so we can come and watch and be a part of it.
And experience
it. Experience it, yeah. And just like have time for me to go see my dad as well, give me an excuse to go home. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the reasons I do, you know, I do that. So,
yeah. He must be so
it's challenging.
Proud of you though. I mean, when
I see him, he says, yeah, I mean, I think so. But when I see him, he's like, did you used to play football? Mm. Where'd you go to school again?
I'm so sorry.
So it's just like I have to say the same story over and over again, which is kind of hard. And then he'll remember stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not a relationship with my father. It's a different dynamic.
Of course.
So it's just I came to acceptance after, you know, 4, 5, 6 years of it happening. It was just like angry, sad.
You had to go through all the stages.
All the stages. You know, I wanted to fight for him to like get back in shape. He gained like 150 pounds because he just ate whatever. It didn't work out. Hired him a trainer full time. Tried to do whatever I could to motivate him. And just the tactics or strategies weren't working like they would have worked with him.
Right.
So it's just coming to a phase of acceptance over the last 15, 14 years.
Do you have moments of clarity when you're with him that you do connect and you break through and you're fully there with each other?
I think so. Mm-hmm. But it's never going to be the same because he's limited in his ability to think and communicate. Mm-hmm. But there's moments where we'll definitely like laugh and talk about funny stuff, and his personality will come out a little bit, but his personality shifted too. So, you know, it's just the brain functions, I guess, in a different way when you traumatically hit it that hard. So I have a lot to be grateful for. He gave me 21 years of some great times, you know, and he's still alive and he's happy. Mm-hmm. He seems to be not in that much pain. So I'm grateful. It's just a different dynamic, different relationship.
Yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of losing the father that you had and having to develop a new relationship under circumstances that are out of both of your control.
It's out of control. And it's like, here's a man who would do anything for his kids and would show up, and he was at every football game taking photos on the sideline. I've got thousands of photos he's taken, and he just was so excited about life, and now he's not excited about life. Mm. So it's like he died, but he's still physically here. And so you just have the memories, but he's not doing that anymore. Mm. So.
Well, the only thing I can say, because there's no words of comfort that can be given for a situation like this that is out of your control and out of his control.
Right.
It's just a, you know, unfathomable part of life, basically. But I will say that even if you don't understand things, you know, you do understand things. Mm-hmm. And so when he's there watching you, he understands energetically.
Yeah.
And I know that he's proud of you.
Yeah.
And,
of course,
you know, in those moments of clarity, man, he taught you how to be the man that you have become.
Yeah.
And he did an amazing job.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Thank you. I think it's interesting that the way I asked you, I was like, do you think you'd be this talented poet doing these poems if your father wasn't there?
Yeah.
And you said, probably not. Maybe something different, but not this way. And I'm like, I don't think I would be caring much about impacting humanity in the biggest way that I care about without him going through that experience. And I don't think I would have learned how to make money. I don't think I would have learned how to do all these things. It's like I had to grow up that day and not rely on him because he was so supportive. He was so giving. He was, you know, comforting emotionally, mentally, spiritually, financially. Mm. And so when that was gone, it was like, okay, I had to become born.
Right.
And learn all these skills that I didn't know.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have that to rely on anymore. So in a sense, in an unfortunate sense, it took a tragic event for me to learn a lot. And to like move forward into this new being, as opposed to, I don't know, I was.
Keep going at the same pace and in the same direction you were going. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way to make sense out of something like that. Right. And there are, you know, unfortunately, so many situations that you just can't make sense out of. Right. There's no way to say, this is why this happened. Mm-hmm. But whatever does happen, we then have an opportunity after we go through those stages, which are necessary in grief, to decide whether or not we wind up being victimized by the situation or empowered by it. And, you know, this is an unfortunate situation that is unexplainable, but it does sound, you know, to what you said, that you became empowered by it ultimately. And you being empowered has empowered countless other people along the way. And so that's true alchemy. You know, and you can do that through art. You can do that through business. I mean, business can be art too. Anything you do in life is your art. The lives that we're leading is our masterpiece, you know. So I feel that you did transform that and are continuing to transform that. And that, by the way, if he understands or he understands, that is something that he would be unbelievably proud of you for.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Love you both.
Love you too. Thank you, man.
My friend, I hope you feel empowered to use your voice in a magical way today, to share it with the world, to open up your heart, to express what's on your mind, and to get your dreams into life by using the power of your voice. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoy hanging out with NQ every time I see him, then do me a favor and share this with one friend, because you have the power to change someone's life today, to impact someone's life, to improve someone's life by just sending them this link, lewishouse.com/934, or just copy and pasting the link from the Apple podcast you're listening to, or Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Take the link, text it to one, two, or three friends right now, and post it on your Instagram story and put the link on there for people to listen. You have the power to change someone's life by sharing this free, incredible, insightful interview. Do it right now. And if this is your first time here, I would love it if you subscribe to the School of Greatness on Apple and leave us a review. Let us know what you thought of this, what you enjoyed from it, how it helped you, how it supported you. And I'm sure NQ would love to hear the feedback also on how this supported you with his message. I'm so grateful for your time. I know these are some weird times right now, and I hope you continue to come back here, because we're committed to serving you in the highest level to help you get through any challenge you're facing. We're committed to giving you the tools, getting the most out of the most brilliant people in the world, so you are supported in your life. This is not the School of Average. This is the School of Greatness, and we are committed in the biggest way to supporting your life. I'm so grateful for you. I love you so very much. And as Eleanor Roosevelt said, speak your mind, even though your voice shakes. It's a duty for you to speak your mind right now and share your voice with the world. And as always, you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley.
The new Tempur Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.